scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguilla, rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk. Starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's welcome you to the Scotiabank Saddledome, and let's get things underway on this Friday, March 14th. It is Steinberg and Wes along with you from the Hot Stove Lounge, and we're available on this hour of Flames Talk and every day wherever you get your podcasts and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And we've got some news to get to on this Friday program as we say hello to Wes Gilbertson of Post Media for the last time this week. Hello, Wes.
Hello, Pat.
How we doing?
We made it to Friday.
We did. I don't know how, but we did. We're here, and I guess we might as well do an hour of Flames talk. The news is out. It's going to be a while out of the lineup for Michael Backlund, the captain, officially week to week with an upper body injury, which means at least 2 weeks out of the lineup for Michael. That's kind of the way the Flames have gone about it. If it's day-to-day, it's like up to a week, week and a half. Yeah. It's multiple weeks, they say, week to week.
And not to interrupt you already, I'll certainly make a habit of that over the next
Please
hour.
Do.
We don't really have any inkling on exactly what that means in
no.
this scenario, do we?
No. No good feel in terms of, you know, actually how long out of the lineup Michael's going to be out. But the captain isn't going to play Friday. Probably won't be on the road trip next week, which starts Monday in Toronto. And you sure do feel bad for him. You know, you were hoping that some of the tests that he was getting taken out, some of the that were being taken out on him, or some of the imaging that he was getting done on Thursday, you were hoping that maybe there would be some good news coming from those things. But he's not going to be able to play for a little bit here. And you know that this is killing him. Like, we're talking about a guy that lives for helping this team, and he has embraced the role of being captain and takes it extremely seriously. And now, at this point of the year, in a tooth and nail playoff fight, to not be able to help the group, you know that this one's going to be killing him, as he won't be able to play in this crucial contest against Colorado Friday night and for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and as our colleague Derek Wills, who's sitting here with us, has pointed out, 328 consecutive game Ironman streak for Michael Backlund. I think his ability to play through pain and his willingness to play through pain, quite frankly, has been underrated over the years. I'll tell you guys, actually, to be honest, just based, you know, on some of the social media or maybe the lack of chatter I've seen on social media, it honestly feels to me like we're seeing an example of how much Michael Backlund has been taken for granted kind of overall. Like, I thought, just anecdotally speaking, that there was a lot more concern when Connor Zary suffered his knee injury in January. And maybe that was why, you know, partially to do with the fact that the replay was so gruesome. And in this case, we don't really know when and where and what happened. But, I think people might be under selling the importance or the significance of what the loss of Michael Backlund could mean to the Calgary Flames. Like, this is a really devastating blow.
Well, if you were to ask me, and if I were to put together a list of, like, the top tier of players that I think this team could least afford to lose, Michael Backlund would be in that top tier with Nazem Kadri, with Mackenzie Weegar, with Rasmus Anderson, and with Dustin Wolf. Those would be the five guys that would be in my top tier of players that this team just doesn't have the type of personnel to even when we saw Kevin Ball miss those 8-9 games, we saw how much they struggled, and that was taking a top two pairing guy out. The depth on defense, the depth down the middle, and obviously we know how huge Dustin Wolf has been between the pipes. Like, those are the areas that I've said to myself, boy, if you lose one of those guys, that's going to be really tough sledding. So now we see just how tough sledding it's going to be and how the Flames can rally around a really significant loss down the middle and their longest tenured player who, yes, has the Ironman streak and, yes, is the captain and, yes, is the second longest tenured player in franchise history, but he's also one of your most important matchup takers. He's also the guy, as we pointed out on Thursday's show, nobody in the league has taken more defensive zone faceoffs than Michael has. Nobody has taken more shorthanded faceoffs than Michael has. We're talking about him responsibility-wise taking on some of the most difficult and taxing minutes anywhere in the National Hockey League on a nightly basis. To just remove that and remove a guy who does it as well as he does, it's going to be a real test for the Flames.
Well, and let's not forget that, you know, this is not a team that will say, oh, okay, boys, we don't have our shutdown center for a little while, so let's win 8-7 instead of 7-6. This is a team that is going to need to win hockey games 2-1 and 3-2 if they're going to achieve the goal they set out, right? If they're gonna hang, and we expect them to continue to hang in this wild card chase, they're going to need to win those low-scoring, grinded-out type games, and they don't have a forward who does that better than Michael Backlund.
And look, every time that we have kind of written the Flames off, or the outside has written the Flames off, the Flames have pushed back and not, like, proven that, no, now is not the time to write us off. And so I'm not suggesting now is the time to just throw them in the trash and say that now they're done and they've got no chance, because every time that people have said that, they've been able to make sure that's not the case, and I give them a lot of credit for being able to do so. But it's not an ideal guy to lose. Yeah. It's not an ideal time after the trade deadline to lose him. Let me play you a couple of clips, and then we can dive in on what you kind of researched and threw out over on the Post Media websites earlier on this Friday, because I do think it's a fascinating parallel. This was you asked a couple players today after a Friday morning skate before the Flames take on the Colorado Avalanche Friday night. Basically, to paraphrase your question, you kind of said, like, hey, there's going to be a narrative around the league that you lose a player like this, team's cooked, and this is it for the playoffs. And, you know, this is probably going to be the blow that knocks you out for good. And he said, how do you change that? How do you make sure that's not the case? This was Ryan Huska, the head coach's answer to that.
A lot of times your leadership group, whether that starts with the coaching staff or your guys, the six guys, whatever we talk about all the time, a lot of times it's the, I mean, it's how they approach or how they come into the rink every day, so the players understand that it doesn't really matter who's in or out of our lineup. Expectations are the same. And that goes to the point of other guys have to raise their level, other lines, other pairs have to raise their level. It's something we've done all year, and I believe it's something that we'll continue to do.
And you asked the same question to Blake Coleman, and I loved his answer to it a little earlier today as well.
We got to write our own story. I think, you know, there's a lot of good players, and our organizational depth is really good. And, you know, Clapp's going to come in, and he's shown that he can score and be physical and play a really good role for us. And then, you know, Huntsie's no stranger to the league and has been good for us in the past as well. And sometimes, you know, you get that little injection of energy or whatever it is. It just kind of changes the dynamic in the room a little bit, and you can use it in your favor. And, you know, we got not a lot of time left here to start climbing and winning some games. So it's on the guys that are in the locker room with that next man up, and we'll get done.
So the question now becomes, can the Flames rally around the loss of an important player, their captain, and one of their most important role players? It's for a team that is not super deep down the middle, Yeah, it's a significant loss. But, boy, you wrote about this over at Post Media. It sure does harken back to about a decade ago, hey, when something very similar happened. This was a more significant injury a decade ago. It ended the guy's season. But
yeah.
Some guy who just happened to be the captain, one of the most important players on his team, he also went down after the trade deadline, and somehow the Flames were able to figure it out.
Yeah, and the parallels are really strong. You go back to 2014-15, it was not quite exactly the same time of the season. In this case, the Flames had 21 games to go rather than 18, but they lost Mark Giordano for the rest of the season. And, you know, a similar, I suppose, script up to that point. They were a team that the hockey world expected to stink. They had been surprising everybody, you know, and that was the narrative, was exactly what I was asking some of the guys about today, that in the thick of a playoff race, when there doesn't seem to be a big difference between the four teams in that wild card hunt, people are going to look and say, well, this could be what takes the Calgary Flames out of it. This could be the loss they can't overcome. And I'll add another parallel that I find totally fascinating. And, you know, you can go read the story on the Post Media sites. But when the Flames announced, and it was a little bit delayed in this case because they were trying fairly unsuccessfully to hide the severity of Giordano's injury before the trade deadline.
When he took warm up?
When he took that one-handed warm up on Long Island. So when they announced that he was lost for the season, you want to know where they were sitting in the standings?
Eighth?
Eighth in the West. Now, they were also tied for third in the Pacific at that point, but they were tied for the final wild card, tied for eighth, which is exactly where they were this morning when they announced that Michael Backlund would be lost. And so I think, unfortunately for the Flames, the only holdover from that team in terms of being able to share those lessons happens to be Michael Backlund. But if you're looking for optimism that a team can withstand this type of loss, that a team can ultimately get through it, there it is. 10 years ago, I'd be the first to tell you, like, Mark Giordano out for the season, okay, I can make plans for the last week of April. I'm not going to be watching playoff hockey. And that Flames team, to their credit, managed to continue to roll. They won 12 of their last 21 games, I think, got points out of 15 of them. And now the challenge is on this Flames team.
Yep.
Does Michael Backlund miss all 18? Does he miss half of those? We don't know. We really don't have a good hint on that. But the challenge is to forge ahead just like that team did in 14-15.
Well, and the parallels can continue because, you know, and again, slightly different because Mark Giordano was lost for the season. Maybe had they gotten out of the second round, he would have been able to make a run at a return in the Western Conference Final, but they didn't make it that far. But you go back to 10 years ago, they were also getting the benefit. Not only were the Flames having a very surprising season, but a team that had high expectations was floundering. The Los Angeles Kings that year under Daryl Sutter could not figure it out. They couldn't score. They couldn't figure out a way to get over the hump. As the defending Stanley Cup champions, the LA Kings could not, the Cup champions two of the three prior years couldn't figure it out and couldn't end up getting in the playoffs when it was all said and done. And this time it feels like Vancouver, now granted not the defending Stanley Cup champions, but a team that had a hell of a year last year, looked like they were poised to build on that. They were a game away from playing in the Western Conference Final last year, and the Vancouver Canucks are the team that can't seem to get out of their own way. And
yeah,
yes, they put together a spectacular third period against Calgary on Wednesday and came from behind to win that game, which really turns the narrative in the Western Conference playoff race quite a bit. But at the same time, what has Vancouver done through their first 65 games that would lead you to believe that, oh yeah, well, you know what, this team is on the precipice of figuring it out? There's probably more to suggest that LA was going to figure it out in 2015 than Vancouver is in 2025, because at least LA, with Kopitar and Doughty and Quick and that group, Willie Mitchell and all the group that went into being a Stanley Cup champion two of the prior 3 years, you're like, oh yeah, these guys will figure it out. They didn't. I don't know. I've got even less confidence that Vancouver is just going to completely figure it out, which plays into Calgary's favor that much more, even without Michael Backlund in the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is very much tightened up. I know the Pittsburgh Penguins did the Flames a solid last night and beat the St. Louis Blues, but this race has tightened up. Like this is very much a four horse race, and it's going to be interesting to see how long Michael Backlund misses and how the Flames can, I guess, weather that storm. Like I went and looked today, the first game without Mark Giordano, the Flames dressed both Rafael Diaz and Corey Potter on the blue line. Not a soul in the world.
Corey Potter.
Except for maybe Rafael Diaz and Corey Potter's immediate family would have watched that game or looked at that lineup and said, oh, yeah, they'll be fine.
Corey Potter, I didn't even remember, played on that team.
Nobody looked and said, they'll be fine.
He played two playoff games that year. I don't even remember that.
I don't think anyone's looking today at a lineup that shows you that Yegor Sharangovich is probably going to be your shutdown center and thinks, you know what? They won't miss Backlund that much. They got Sharangovich as their shutdown. I don't think that's the narrative, and yet if you're looking for optimism, that history certainly provides some.
Yeah, I if I remember correctly,
I've taken the wind out of your sails with the Corey Potter reference. I can see you playing his greatest hits through your mind right now.
I didn't even remember him being on the team, honestly. And my memory for things is pretty decent. I did not even remember. Did you remember Corey Potter? Will's the same boat as me. I was like, Corey Potter? And then, played six games and two in the playoffs.
I think, not to get deep into the weeds, but I think it would have been a few days later that they claimed
David Schlemko.
David Schlemko.
I remember him.
Shootout ace on waivers.
Because I remember vividly David Schlemko, and because I remember the day that they clinched the playoffs, the day after he joined me here in the Hot Stove Lounge, and we were talking, and Schlemko stepped in and played a pretty crucial role on top of that Boston shootout winner that we'll always remember. You know, Dennis Weidman and Chris Russell were the guys that really had to step up on the blue line that year.
TJ Brody rarely left the ice for a few weeks as well.
Brody,
right?
Was massive back there.
Yeah.
Russell scored that huge game winner in game one against Vancouver.
Yeah.
Weidman he ended up, I think he started averaging like 24, 25 minutes a night back there.
But please don't leave out Potsy.
I'll never forget Corey Potter again. Don't you worry. Read a few texts, 960-960. This says, for years, I didn't appreciate what Backlund did for the Flames. I'm happy to say I've had my eyes open the last few years. And I do think there is a lot of that, and I think there might be... I don't think the third period goes the way it does Wednesday if Michael Backlund's healthy. I don't think that the snowball, and it's not like the Flames haven't had snowballs roll downhill on them before. I mean, it happens to every team, but in that scenario, I think they probably don't get their doors blown off in the third period and maybe find a way to close that one out if Backlund's healthy. I honestly do, and obviously people make fun of me all the time for my affinity for Michael Backlund, the player. I do think throughout his entire time as a member of the Flames, 1,000 games plus, he'll be at 1,100 some point next year. With his time in Calgary, I think almost the entire time he has been grossly underappreciated. I see it on Twitter. I see it on the text line. Oh, they're not even going to miss the guy. I don't think that there is enough appreciation for the tough minutes this guy plays and how important those minutes are to Calgary's success on a lot of nights.
Yeah, that's been my takeaway so far today. And I don't like judging it by, you know, kind of what you see on social media and stuff, because I know that can be that's a vocal minority sometimes, but I certainly get the sense that there is some underestimation of how big these shoes are to fill. And we're going to see it tonight, right? Like if you're Yegor Sharangovich being plugged into that shutdown center role, you'd like a bit of a warm-up, right? Nathan MacKinnon is not the driving range or the putting green when it comes to just kind of getting yourself feeling better for your shutdown round, right? Nathan MacKinnon is the NHL's leading scorer. Nathan MacKinnon is a top two top three, whatever you want to say, player in the National Hockey League. Some people would say top one player in the National Hockey League. And so we're going to see it tonight. It would have been a big job for Michael Backlund. And this is a really big job for anybody else.
Michael Backlund, offensive zone start ratio, just over 38%. He gets absolutely hammered with these zone starts, as we know, as we talked about.
I think Ryan Huska just throws him the odd offensive zone start.
Just for fun?
Just to sort of make him feel better about all the defense.
Hey, we'll let you start here once in a while, okay?
He leads the NHL in defensive zone faceoffs, and as we talked about yesterday on Flames Talk, not just leads the NHL, but he'll need to miss a handful of games before anyone catches up to him.
Yep. And you know, the players that are in the same category as him in those defensive zone draws, Nico Hischier, Jordan Staal, Adam Lowry, Anze Kopitar, take those guys away from their teams. And I'm not saying that everyone's a perfect example or a perfect comparison, but it shows you the role that he plays. You take a look at his underlying
numbers. You could have been reading a Selke trophy ballot there.
Well, and Michael Backlund is going to go down as he may never win a Selke trophy, but he's going to go down as one of those guys who forged his way as one of the best two-way centers in the NHL. His five-on-five metrics, he has one of the lowest offensive zone starts on the team at just over 38%, and yet he remains always in the black in terms of his possession metrics, up just below 53%, one of the best forwards on the team, and nobody has outperformed their zone start like Backlund has. I'm sorry. The offense may not be something that's popping, and it may be it's going to be down this year for Michael. He turns 36 soon, but he's still, in terms of his impact, his head-to-head role, his home ice specifically assignments, and how Ryan Huska uses him. No, I do think that there's a little bit of underrating how important the guy is on this team.
Yeah, and as you outlined earlier, and you had your list of guys that would be the biggest losses for this team, you know, one of the, I suppose, key criteria to put a name on that list from my standpoint, and my list would be very similar to yours, is that what's the drop off to your next option there, right? If Nazem Kadri is not driving the offense for this team, who's driving the offense? Well, it's the exact same question with Michael Backlund and the defense from a forward standpoint.
Yep. Okay. More on the text line. Here's Tyler. You're grossly overstating Backlund's role on this team. The parallels are not there when it's the type of player. Gio was their top two defenseman. Bax is nowhere near as close to as important. He's a great player, awesome guy, great veteran. I'm not saying he's not important, but the on-ice impact is not going to be nearly as noticeable, and I just don't think it's going to be as unnoticeable as Tyler's suggesting. This says Backlund's a key part of the Flames. I think the lack of attention is fear or anxiety. This says Bax is unreal. If he had better finishing, he'd be Bergeron. He's that good defensively, massively underappreciated. This says people don't understand how important Backlund was to shutting down McDavid in certain nights against the Oilers. And that series against Edmonton in 2022 went from being pretty, like, it was the Oilers scored 6-6, and then they blew the Flames out in game 3. And it wasn't until game 4, which, yes, the Flames lost, but it wasn't until game 4 that McDavid's impact became that much less. And it was when Daryl Sutter finally started to hard match Michael Backlund against Connor McDavid, and he was, I know he scored the overtime winner, but in game 4 and game 5 he was significantly less of a factor because finally Backlund was going against him head to head on almost every shift.
Yeah, and I think one of the ultimate compliments, and this is something I try to pay close attention to when the Flames are on the road, is you watch the way opposing coaches go out of their way when they have last change to keep their best players away from Michael Backlund.
Yeah.
You watch the respect he gets in the way that nobody wants their stars going up against Michael Backlund when they have that choice. I think that's one of the great compliments. Like, you'll get nights where the home coach is sort of confident that they'll almost take whatever matchup. It's more about making sure that, they're able to roll their lines and get a bit of a groove going. And you don't see that as much against Backlund. You really see coaches go out of their way to keep their stars away from them, and I think that's a huge compliment.
All right. It's going to be an undertaking, no doubt, for the Flames without Michael Backlund. It starts Friday night. We'll see how they do as we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, and we're here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome in the Hot Stove Lounge. Everything is coming at you back at our downtown studio. It's Azam and Taylor back there producing, and our downtown studio is the Groundworks Downtown Studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, time now for a Friday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday. So, gentlemen, we know that no Connor Zeri in the lineup for Friday's game against Colorado or Monday's game against Toronto. And we know for both those games and more, no Michael Backlund either. He's week to week with an upper body injury. So at least for this Friday game between the Flames and Avalanche and maybe going into Monday and beyond, Yegor Sharangovich is the player that they are going to move from the wing to the middle to take on that vacated center ice spot. You know, Zeri might have been that guy had he been available, but he's going to have to serve a two-game suspension. So it's Sharangovich that gets the call, and we'll see what the line combos end up looking like. But, you know, Wilsey, when we were talking about it this morning, you know, probably wouldn't be a surprise if he was between Coleman and Farabee for this game against Colorado. So, you know, if this is going to be something that works, how does it work? How do the Flames and how does Sharangovich make this a successful move back to the middle?
Yeah, I'm anxious to see what the lines and pairings, more so the lines than the pairings, look like before tonight's game against the Avalanche, because we did not see lines and pairings at today's morning skate. But, you know, I threw it out there post-game on Wednesday. We talked about it again yesterday on the roundtable. I think it's the right move to move Yegor Sharangovich to the middle. He has the best face-off percentage in the team, and I know he has a smaller sample size to work with than Michael Backlund and Nazem Kadri and even Kevin Rooney, but, you know, he's been way better in the face-off circle this season than last season, and I think he has the ability to play the same type of game that Michael Backlund was playing. And listen, the captain wasn't overly productive offensively. He had one goal and 2 points in the last 12 games, but was doing a great job defensively, even though he was clearly playing through something for the last number of weeks or even months. And I do think that Sharangovich has it in him to play that style of game. We just haven't seen enough from him offensively this season. So now I'm wondering if he could figure it out defensively and maybe plug that hole. And we still don't know that he will be centering Joel Farabee and Blake Coleman, but that's what I threw out there over the last couple of days. So we'll see if that's what it looks like in a warm-up. And if that's how they start, we'll see if that's how they finish. Because I did ask Ryan Huska during media availability this morning if he thought the lines might be fluid tonight. And he said, yeah, well, they kind of have been with them swapping Matt Coronato and Connor Zeri between the right side of the first and fourth line. So I don't expect that'll change tonight. But, you know, Sharangovich is a guy who's coming off a career year, led the Flames with a career-high 31 goals, finished second in the team with a career-high 59 points last season, the most goals and points in a season by a Belarusian in the history of the National Hockey League. Got that contract extension, expectations were high, and guys, in hindsight, I wonder how much that injury in the third period of the final preseason game set him back. Missed the first seven games of the regular season and really hasn't looked like himself all season long. And, yeah, he's had plenty of time to figure it out and hasn't. But maybe just taking his focus away from scoring goals and producing points and asking him to check. And the Flames head coach told us this morning he has been very clear with what the expectations are. I talked to Yegor Sharangovich about it this morning. So I'm just hoping maybe a change in focus will help him find not necessarily his game, but a game that will help the Flames win for as long as Michael Backlund is out.
Yeah, I think you're more optimistic about whether he's up to the challenge than I am. And I say that because this is a player that I'm really down on. And it's not just that...
Fair.
Yeah, it's not just that the offense has dried up. Just the lack of sort of competitive engagement I find fairly startling. I'm sure frustrating would be a better word for Ryan Huska and the rest of the coaching staff to use. And yet, in saying that, I sort of like the idea of throwing him this sink or swim opportunity. Like, if he's going to be as competitive on pucks as he's been in the last couple of weeks in his battles tonight with Nathan MacKinnon, and we do expect that that's the matchup they're going to ask him to work. If he's going to be that competitive on pucks, he is going to have a dreadful night. And I actually think, as the Flames look for something to spark Yegor Sharangovich out of what's been a little bit of a slumber, it might be good for him.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a reminder of exactly what you need to put into it to rub shoulders with the best of the best in this game. God, you're throwing him in so cold. And when I say cold, I mean just in such a rotten stretch of hockey that I'd be nervous about it, and yet I'd be the first to admit that he's their best option.
Well, and honestly, like, I do think the only option, I don't know if at this stage of the game putting Rory Karens down the middle at this stage is the way to go. I don't think Clark Bishop is the answer. And the same reasoning on Karens I'd put on Sam Morton. Like, this is a tough time to throw guys with no or next to no NHL experience into the fire against some of the best players on the other side for the next two games. Because let's not forget that Monday we're talking about Austin Matthews and William Nylander and Mitch Marner and John Tavares and that Maple Leafs group on the other side, a Maple Leafs team that, you know, I feel has a better chance of going deep in the playoffs this year than I have in a long, long time. And so that's a tough spot to put two players in, whether it's Karens or Morton. So I understand why they're moving Sharangovich to the middle. I'm with Wes in that I've been very, very underwhelmed by Sharangovich this year. And I know we're all frustrated at what we're seeing because we know he's capable of more. We saw it, to your point, Wilsey. We saw it last year, and we saw him at some point last year. The message got through on that stuff that Wes is talking about, the competitiveness, the battle level, the fighting for loose pucks. Like, nobody's expecting Sharangovich to go and engage in board battles and, you know, all of a sudden start throwing his weight around and that's the player he is. But on 50-50 puck battles and loose ice, like, you need to have a little bit more dig in than what we're seeing. And when he's got the puck and all of a sudden contact's initiated on the cycle, it can't be an easy cycle killer, and it's been that way too often. So I don't know if he's going to be up to the challenge. I do think he's the best option in a really bad spot. And I think that Jerry coming back for Tuesday's game against the Rangers gives him slightly more options, of course. But you hope that this is one of those things that kind of wakes him up and maybe the jolt of, holy, now this is way more responsibility. You hope that you get a whole lot more out of him.
Yeah, and just let me add this quick, and I'll throw it back over to Derek. But one of the things he and I talked about off air this morning, we were having a very similar conversation about Sharangovich in that spot. And, you know, I feel like one of the places he is hurt, and I thought of this as you mentioned the cycle, one of the places he's hurt his team more than helped of late has been on those puck retrievals. Like, he's not been an effective forechecker. Well, first on the forecheck is not where you normally see a center, and so potentially it solves that problem in a small way. I don't know, maybe I'm trying to be too glass half full there, but I wonder if that can be one benefit of having Sharangovich up the middle.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's asking Yegor Sharangovich to be Tom Wilson. Like, you don't have to go run around and hit guys. That's not who he is. And let's be honest, with what he's been playing through, Michael Backlund hasn't been as physical as he normally would be. But there's a difference between being physical and being competitive. And they do need him to be more competitive and to win more of those 50-50 puck battles. And one thing that Ryan Husk has talked a lot about last season and this season is that Cherngovich tends to be better when he has the puck on his stick more. He should have the puck on his stick more playing center, and maybe that helps get him more engaged. Because when you've got the puck on your stick, you've got no choice but to be engaged. Mm. When you're waiting for the puck, I think it's easier to be unengaged. So I'm maybe a little bit more excited, given the circumstances. I'd be super excited if Michael Backlund was playing and closer to 100%. But I may be a little bit more excited about this because the Flames are going to need a bunch of players to help fill the huge hole left by the captain. And I think Yegor Cherngovich is right at the top of that list for me. Certainly, if you get Connor Zeri back, I'm not sure I would have put him at center against this Avalanche team. But I think he might be a better fit once you get on the road, certainly past that first game against the Maple Leafs. Then you've got the Rangers and the Islanders and the Devils coming up to wrap that trip up. Maybe that works better, but I think Cherngovich is the best choice for tonight, and who knows? Stranger things have helped a guy turn his season around,
yeah.
And if they can get him going down the stretch, even if he doesn't pile up goals and points and just starts to play a more effective brand of hockey and finds a way to help his team,
yep,
however that may be, I think that's going to be huge.
Well, because Ryan Husk has been talking, you know, all week to us, but, you know, all season even more so about the importance of making sure every guy on the roster feels, yeah, value. Well, telling Yegor Cherngovich he's your best bet to fill in for Michael Backlund, if he doesn't feel valued based on that, I don't know what does the trick.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you're playing with Blake Coleman, you better put your work boots on.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you're going to look silly.
Yep.
And Joel Farabee's been playing really well. So assuming that Yegor Cherngovich slots in between those two guys, which would then leave a line with Morgan Frost, I would think that Martin Pospisil would go on the left and maybe Adam Klapka in a top nine role on the right. And then you probably have a third line with Kevin Rooney, Ryan Lomberg, and Dryden Hunt.
Fourth line.
I think that's how they'll probably start this game. The question is that how they're going to end the game?
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek, Wes, Pat on this Friday. And it's Dryden Hunt who does get the recall. You know, it felt like it was going to be Hunt. Just kind of when the news of Zeri's suspension and the looming kind of doom and gloom when it comes to Michael Backlund's injury status was hanging over Thursday, just kind of felt like at this stage of the game, it feels like this might be a Dryden Hunt recall with the trust level the coaching staff has in him, with how much trust personally we know Ryan Huska has in him. You know, final quarter of the season, it feels like usually the coach is going to, especially in a playoff race, like if they were 12 points out, it would be somebody else. But, you know, at this stage of the game, when you're fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot, yeah, I think that the GM is going to defer to the guy that the coach trusts the most. And in this case, 48 points in 48 games for Dryden Hunt in the American League. He's played one game in the NHL this year. What do we make of him being the guy recalled from the American League on an emergency basis as it stands right now?
Well, I threw two names out there yesterday, and he was the second name. In hindsight, he probably should have been the first name. The first guy I threw at you guys was Rory Cairns. Because, you know, he does have 4 points in five career NHL games, and the Flames are a team that could use a little bit or a lot more offense. But when you look at this Avalanche team, I don't think that there's been a roster in the NHL that's had more turnover than the Avalanche this season. They've used a league-high 47 players. And I remember talking to you guys about the Avalanche earlier this season and saying, yeah, they've got Nathan MacKinnon, who's one of the best forwards in the game. They've got Cale Makar, who's one of the best defensemen in the league. But I feel like they're too top-heavy to compete with deeper teams in the Western Conference. Well, guys, that's not the case anymore. I mean, it is crazy the number of trades they've made. Over and above all the players they've acquired and dealt away, they've traded away 10 draft picks and have acquired 6. So it's bonkers how much that this roster has changed. And they're a team that can now roll 4 lines and 3 pairings, and I think that puts them in a better spot to have success. So getting back to where I started here, I don't think you can hide a guy like Rory Cairns against a team that is as deep as the Avalanche. So I think Dryden Hunt was the right guy. He's got 231 games of NHL experience under his belt. I had a chat with him this morning. We'll hear that on the pregame show. He's a guy who's played in big games before. And He's a guy who has experience in this league and who knows what his role is in this league. And he told me this morning, he goes, hey, I'm not going to be a point-of-game player here. I get that. But I still feel like I can play an important role, a north-south style, and you know, get in there in the forecheck and win some battles. So I do think that he was the right guy to recall. I will add this, though. So he has played all three forward positions in his career. I know there were some people thinking, okay, well, maybe move Kevin Rooney up into the top nine to play a checking role, potentially on a line between Joel Farabee and Blake Coleman, and then call someone up to play fourth-line center. I don't think that's Dryden Hunt, guys. I asked him if he was comfortable playing all three positions. He said, more so the wing than center. So I don't think we're going to see him playing up the middle here.
No, I don't think so at all. The word that comes to mind for me with the Dryden Hunt recall is safe. You know yeah. what Dryden Hunt is.
He competes.
Right? Absolutely. Like it's just safe in yeah. the sense of you know what you're getting. What's the biggest risk with Dryden Hunt? It's that he's got a 14-day-old at home and he probably hasn't got as much sleep as he's accustomed to. But this is a guy that when you put him in, you just know what you're going to get. And Pat and I talked on Flames Talk, I think it was earlier this week, and you know, one of the points I made then was I hope that when there's an opportunity, they give it to a young guy. If they need a guy, I hope that they continue to put development at the top of the priority list. But in this case, Dryden Hunt really does make a lot of sense. It's a top caliber opponent. You just know what you're getting. And the other thing I'll say, and then I'll chuck it over to Pat, is while he's not comfortable at center, Dryden Hunt gives you a lot of versatility. We've seen Ryan Huska want to put him in all sorts of spots in the lineup, and knowing that the blender is already plugged in because we don't know how this is going to go yeah. tonight, I think Dryden Hunt, as opposed to a younger guy like Cairns or Morton, you're a little more comfortable if you need to start to fiddle that you could put him in some different spots.
Yeah, I don't. Honestly, this one, it just felt like such a no-brainer that they were going to go Hunt this time because of the trust, because he's got a little bit more NHL experience, because we're into the final 18 games of the regular season now, because they're trying to protect the playoff spot, all those types of things. I think it just... Yeah, you're going to go with the guy that the coaching staff is most comfortable with. And to your point, you're not having to pick and choose spots or potentially hide against, you know, good players on the other side. And look, he's still going to be in a fourth-line role, so it's not like we're talking about him being a guy that swings things one way or the other. But, you know, in Klapka and Hunt, they're guys that the coaching staff knows well, have a pretty good idea on how to use them, the book on them, all that type of stuff. Whereas if you're bringing in a Morton or a Cairns, you know, there's still a whole lot more in terms of that feeling out process, just in terms of what the coaches have in these players. So, yeah, I understand it. I felt it was going to go this way, and I kind of get it just because of the time of year we're at and where the Flames are in the standings.
Yeah, I mean, they're still in the driver's seat to get that second wild card spot in the Western Conference. Every single point means so much to this team, and this is the finale of a three-game homestand. You're about to go on the road for four, and boy, you'd love to pick up a point or two against the Avalanche tonight and try to win the week, but I think he's the right guy to slot in on probably the right side of the fourth line with Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg. And what the Flames need from that fourth line is for them to spend more time in the offensive zone than the defensive zone. That's when that line, regardless of who has been on it, has been effective this season. You can't have them defending and underwater, because that has not worked out very well for the Flames this season. And I do think that with the pace and the competitiveness that Dryden Hunt plays with, he'll be a good fit on that fourth line if that's where he lands.
And that is our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday. He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Azam and Taylor back at Sportsnet 960 World Control. And that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport.